Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
How can advertising on TikTok help jumpstart sales for your small business?
Thanks to TikTok ads, I was able to open up a business with my childhood friend, get a warehouse, and even hire employees. My name is Julian, and I am one of the founders of The Snacks Lab. We are an exotic snack company. We had over $100,000 in sales from our TikTok ads in the first month. So our orders went from 5 a day to over 250 orders a day. You definitely have to use TikTok ads, and you gotta start now.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Happy Friday out there. May 9, 2025 is the date. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the show. That'll be Connor Dunning on X at C Dunning 929. Connor, what's the word, brother?
What's up, man?
What's happening? Have you seen the new Untold on Netflix, by the way, with Javaris Crittenden and the Gilbert Arenas?
I have not seen
it. I watched that last night. Pretty phenomenal. And good timing, because today on the show, very hyped up. I've been trying to get him on, but obviously with what has happened in his life and Gilbert Arenas' life, we had sort of had to move it around. Elijah Arenas, though, I have talked to this man, and he said that Elijah Arenas is all good after the car crash and everything else. Injuries very low, but it could have gone left. We're going to have Josiah Johnson on today. How about that? NBA Twitter Hall of Famer? Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Like, half of my bookmarks are just right. His tweets.
Yeah, he's the executive producer.
The videos he's used.
He's the executive producer and host of the Gil's Arena Show. So he's in front of Rashad McCants and Kenyon Martin and Swaggy P and Gilbert every day. See, Kenyon Martin and Swaggy P almost got into it.
I did see that.
Going to have to ask him about that.
That was
Josiah, I'm excited to do that at 4:30. 5 o'clock, David Cobb will join from CBS Sports. We only have a two-hour show today. We're going to pass you off to Cavs and Pacers Game 3. Cavs, injury list. We'll see how that's going to play out. Looks like they may give it a go. We'll talk about that in just a bit. Also, we need to get to Draymond Green in just a moment. But that is going to be the show for you, and we'll get out, of course, at about 5:50 with Small Talk. But I was watching that Untold last night. Really sad story, man, for Javaris Crittenden, of course. Manslaughter. I mean, he was aiming for somebody who robbed him previously and hit a mom, a mother, and a daughter in Julian Jones. And he got out early, and Julian Jones' mom was on there saying it's insane he's still not behind bars. But it seems like Javaris Crittenden actually has gotten it together. I mean, he speaks in front of prisoners and inmates and people that are getting out of prison and tries to put them on the right path. I know him and Gilbert Arenas, even after that run-in when they were with the Wizards, seems like they're on good terms. But you need to go watch that. I like the Untold series. That one was very, very good.
It's a great series.
It's very phenomenal. Very, very good. All right, now, last night we had one game. It was Timberwolves versus the Golden State Warriors, who had a 1-0 lead. They don't have Steph Curry. The latest update is he may not be back till game 6. And again,
if there's a game 6.
Yeah. And we talked about it. This is one of the first times since about 2018 that they've been without him in the NBA playoffs. But then you had Kevin Durant. You had, of course, Draymond Green still. You still had Klay Thompson. You had guys that could really make up for the loss of Steph Curry. But if last night's any indication, they can't make up for the loss of Steph Curry. You just can't do it. They are not shooting well. They shot 9 for 32 from 3. On the other side, the Timberwolves had the worst two-game stretch of three-point shooting in the history of NBA playoffs, but they responded pretty well. 16 for 37 last night, 43, almost 44% from three-point land. Anthony Edwards had the little ankle injury, so there was that. But Julius Randle, I thought, was phenomenal last night, especially creating for his teammates. 24 points, of course, but 11 assists. 11 assists, only 2 turnovers. He had to be their main creator last night because we know Mike Conley is taking a step back. Ant Edwards was not on the floor the entire time. So I thought Julius Randle played a phenomenal playoff game last night. One of the best I've seen him.
He was excellent. He was excellent last night. 11 assists from Julius Randle is a wild stat. I don't know how many times in his career he's had 10 assists, but I bet it's not that many, and he showed up in one of the biggest games of the season for them. And last night, it's exactly what we said before the show. When Steph isn't out there, there's no gravity and there's no open shots for the rest of the Golden State Warriors. They were having to work for every single shot that they got, and it was just not easy for them the entire night. Jimmy Butler was okay last night, but he can't do it all by himself. Jonathan Kuminga, he ended up coming in and giving them some pretty good minutes.
Yep.
But overall, I just don't know if they have enough offensive firepower without Steph to keep up with the Timberwolves. And I think that we can also be honest about it. The Timberwolves still weren't great last night. Like, they shot 50% from the field, but Anthony Edwards had that little bit of an ankle injury, so he wasn't necessarily himself. And overall, as a team, it was really Julius Randle, Naz Reid, and Nikhil Alexander-Walker that was driving their offense. The rest of them kind of struggled. They weren't fantastic. So if the Timberwolves are really clicking and the Golden State Warriors don't have Steph, it could get ugly.
And like I said yesterday, even more than the offense, and they're going to need an offensive punch, and I think they're going to have to, and I know that he's been sort of behind the scenes, not getting the treatment he wants. They're talking about an extension, that he's not all that happy with the way he has been treated by the Warriors over these past few years since he was drafted. Jonathan Kuminga is going to have to play a role.
Has to.
He has to. And Steve Kerr has to get over not playing him. Jonathan Kuminga is going to have to get extended minutes. He's one of your bucket getters. Had 18 last night. You have to play him on the offensive side if you want any shot. But still, I think the best way for the Golden State Warriors going forward, they have to junk it up as much as possible, be as physical as possible with this Minnesota Timberwolves team if they want any shot. You just have to play the game almost under 100 if they want to win like they did in game one.
Yeah, and last night too, the Timberwolves really showed up defensively. Like, Jaden McDaniels was incredible on the defensive end last night. He has been so valuable to this team during their playoff run. I think as a team, they had 10 steals and 5 blocks. That's exactly what you got to do to the Warriors, because as you said, the Warriors are going to try to junk this game up. They're going to try to be physical, and if you can match that physicality, you can take away that advantage.
And the other part of beyond Steph and his gravity, the amount he creates for his team on the offensive end, throwing guys open, taking on double teams, making the right pass, that's something that gets underrated about his game. Without him in there, it's Jimmy Butler and Pods just trying their best to force people to follow them, force double teams, trying to find other guys open. It's not the same. You don't have that same on-ball presence without Steph Curry out there. I know that seems obvious, but it's something we don't talk about as much when it comes to Steph Curry. When you only have Jimmy Butler and Brandon Podziemski on ball facilitating offense, it's going to be just so hard to find a bucket, especially against this Timberwolves defense, which is very
right.
damn good.
They're very,
very good,
big.
And they're big. They have rim protection. They have perimeter defenders. It is amazing to me. And Nikhil Alexander-Walker had 20, of course. Jaden McDaniels was really good last night with 16 on 7-for-10. Shooting. The lack of fall off when you go from a guy like Jaden McDaniels, who to me, all defense for sure, but borderline going into the rest of his career, certain years, he could be a borderline all-star. The lack of fall off from him to Nikhil Alexander-Walker when you go to that second unit is pretty substantial. It's something that I have been paying attention to. Even when he got he fouled out in the Lakers series, I think it was in game 5 when they closed it out. And, I thought it would be a big deal. Jaden McDaniels out of the game. There's 4 minutes left. Nikhil Alexander-Walker is about the same player, just a couple inches shorter.
Yeah, he's a gritty defender. It's one of the reasons a few people within Grizzlies fandom and people who cover the Grizzlies, most notably Parker Fleming, have identified him as somebody that you hope the Grizzlies might be able to pull away
sure.
from the Timberwolves this offseason. But I think that he has shown so much value to the Timberwolves, I would be very surprised if they let him walk.
And he could get a bag elsewhere.
He could get a bag elsewhere.
I mean, we're talking about maybe out of the Grizzlies' price range, if he, because he's going to be a free agent. He may be out of their price range. Because all they really have is the mid-level exception. We'll
right.
see how the Jaren thing goes and everything else. But I don't know if they're going to have the money to be able to throw and Nikhil Alexander-Walker.
He's a very, very good perimeter defender. He can defend on the inside, and he shoots 38% from three. That's exactly what you're looking for. That's exactly who you want to have on your bench during a playoff run. Nikhil Alexander-Walker has been very valuable to them. And like you said, Jaden McDaniels has really felt like he's blossomed this season. They took a risk, and they gave him money before some people thought he deserved it, and it turns out that was the correct decision. One of the best Anthony Edwards clips that we have is when somebody's like, well, this team has this person. He's like, well, we have Jaden McDaniels, and he has been massive for them throughout this playoff series. Their defense last night was so impressive. They did it as a team. They work well together. When the Timberwolves are really clicking defensively, it is very difficult to beat them. And again, last night, like, they had a couple guys have good offensive games, and I know that they scored 117 on 50% shooting from the field, but still, it still feels like they might be able to go up another level. So I'm curious to see, and really that other level is just Anthony Edwards showing up and being a superstar. We haven't really seen that yet this series. If he shows up and is a superstar and the Warriors don't have Steph Curry, I'm not really sure what they're going to do. Right. Because the moment Steph steps across half court, you have to throw a body at him, and that's how they get so many open shots. And like, Buddy Hield was still pretty good last night, but without that gravity of Steph, it's not the same. They're having to work so much harder to get open shots than they usually do.
Yeah. Now, surprise, surprise, an NBA playoff game with the Warriors involved and Draymond Green. We have discourse about him. Last night, it was in the first half. Naz Reid was going up, defending Draymond Green. Draymond Green tried to go up and, you know, draw a foul, and he throws his elbow and hits Naz Reid directly in the side of the head. It's something we've seen on multiple occasions. At some point, we need to stop talking about it being incidental. I think we're at that point here on the Gabe Kuhn Show and in Memphis. It's not incidental. You can't be incidental this many times in your career, much less this playoff. These playoffs for him. He's played 9 games. He has 5 technicals now and 2 flagrants. He is 2 off of suspension for technicals and 2 shy of suspension for flagrants. And he's averaging, I did the math, 0.78 either flagrants or technicals per game in these playoffs because he's only played 9.
And I think we can agree he should have more.
Yes, he should have more.
He should have more.
And honestly, more of them should have been technicals than flagrants.
Right.
There was one game in the first round series that he was playing against the Rockets where they called a flagrant to keep him from being ejected because he already had a technical.
Yep.
But, all right. I know after the game, I will say this first, and maybe he was just perturbed by what happened after the game. The Minnesota Timberwolves had to kick out a fan and ban a fan from showing up to any more playoff games because he did call Draymond Green a racial slur after the game. So maybe that's why Draymond Green was, you know, reacting the way he did after the game. But this is what Draymond Green had to say about all the discourse around his flagrants, his technicals, and the way he plays basketball. Draymond, we know you're an educated black man. We know that you have a good family. And we know that off the court, you act like a normal guy for the most part. Maybe you're a little bit extra on your podcast when you're talking with Baron Davis and you go a little too far talking about current players and everything else. But no one thinks of you as an angry black man. No one thinks of you that way. You're aiming your energy at the wrong thing. What we think of you is that you're a dirty basketball player, man. There's no other way to put it. There's a 15-minute compilation of you fouling people when you're stepping on Sabonis, when you're elbowing Yusuf Nurkic and Naz Reid, when you're kicking Steven Adams in the nads, when you're doing all these things. We view you through the lens of being a dirty basketball player. We don't view you as an angry black man by any stretch of the imagination. And for him to play that, it's bothersome to me to play that card because I think you trying to claim that sort of takes away from the actual trope we deal with on a day-to-day basis of the angry black man. It's something that has happened for as long as we can remember in the United States of America, trying to paint the black man as an angry person. But you're taking away from the normal trope, from people that actually can play that card. We view you through the lens of being a dirty basketball player, nothing else.
Yeah.
Nothing else. And it's just frustrating that
people.
He played that card in that way.
He's hurting people. And I think that what's frustrating about it is Draymond early on in his career, the first few seasons, he played with an edge and he played extremely physical. And sometimes that would lead to hard fouls. The older he has gotten, and as some of his skill has gone away because of his age, he has gotten dirtier and he is playing without any control. And it is leading to him actually hurting people. He's actually hurting people out there on the court, and that's why people were frustrated. He's flailing around, he's playing out of control, and he's hitting people in the eyes, he's hitting people in the nards, he's hitting people everywhere.
I don't care what anyone says, it's purposeful, it's not incidental.
He's trying to pretend like it's incidental, but All of us have eyeballs. We all see what you're doing. During the Rocket series, you should have had more flagrants and more technicals than you got. You get away with a lot.
100%.
You get away with probably more than any other NBA player does in the NBA. Listen, he is an enforcer. He's going to be a Hall of Famer because of the way he plays basketball. He has been a key piece to this Warriors dynasty. There's no doubt about that. But he is a dirty basketball player, and as his career has gone on, he gets dirtier every single season. And at some point, he's going to seriously injure somebody if he keeps playing this way. It's that simple. There is no other story. Draymond has got to relax there out there on the court because he's actively hurting his own basketball team now, too.
Yes, and somebody said when Steph's
not... I mean, he may have cost him an NBA Finals.
Yes, he did, in my opinion, in 2016.
Right.
With a 3-1 comeback, and he was suspended. Somebody said when Steph Curry's not out on the floor, it's like he tries to get ejected every game. And I feel like that. But, you know, the things that Draymond gets away with, it's frustrating because he has this opinion of himself and thinks we're putting the angry black man trope on him, when in reality... You have referees that don't want to give you a 6th foul and foul you out. You have referees that call a flagrant instead of a technical in the Rocket series so you don't get kicked out of the game. You get a lot of leeway, Draymond.
And I think the reason the Warriors as a whole have become so frustrating, I think, for NBA fans outside of the Warriors fan base is because we watch Draymond do this. We watch them get away with so much. And then we have to get preaching from them constantly about codes and the way basketball should be played and all these rules. And it's like, listen, Draymond Green is on your team. That invalidates any complaints
Anything you
may have about another team because he's been playing this way his entire career. And as it has gone on, especially the last two or three seasons, he is playing dirtier, and he is playing more out of control, and it's not on accident. He is doing it because his skill has slipped a little bit. His defensive ability, even though it is still very, very good, has slipped. So he's being more physical than he needs to be, and he's trying to be this enforcer, and he's hurting people.
And he's trying to throw people off their game and all that with all that extra physicality and dirty play.
He's playing like a jackass.
Yes, 100%. Last night, what he did to Naz Reid was so unnecessary and so obviously intentional. And you can't claim that it's incidental. Now, I always have gone after the people in that organization as well, Steve Kerr and everybody else, for sort of letting this go.
They enable it. It leads to wins.
Being
enablers. Enable it.
This is what Steve Kerr said about the entire situation last night as it pertains to Draymond Green. That to me is a non-answer. That's you say it's your job to reel him in. You say it's your job to keep Draymond from doing these things and going over the top, yet he does it time and time again. You're not doing your job very well at that point. And you know, I mean, this is the same guy who punched a teammate when he Jordan Poole.
Ruined a season.
He was with the Warriors, and he got him traded away. That whole thing. So, like, that's another thing. Like, hearing what Steve Kerr said, oh, that's what makes Draymond Draymond. Well, dirty play is going to get somebody hurt. It affects the way we view the game. We get frustrated. It creates all these other headlines for your team. Like, it's just more enabling, like he has done the entire time, probably the last decade with Draymond Green. That's what that felt like, that answer.
Yeah, and that's why it's frustrating when stuff like that comes from Steve Kerr. First off, the question was ridiculous. What poise are you talking about?
Well, I think he meant to say lack of poise. But
yeah,
I was like, what
are you talking about? Draymond has been
this
every
single game. What have you thought of
this
poise?
Yeah, it's like,
terrible.
What?
It's
where?
Never there.
Now, I think what's frustrating about it is the Warriors are clearly okay with it when they have somebody on their team who does things like this. Zaza Pachulia took out Kawhi Leonard during a playoff series, and you didn't hear the Warriors complaining about it because he was on the team, and it led to a win. It led them to ultimately winning an NBA championship that season because they hurt people. It happens. The Warriors, go look at their playoff history. They usually hurt people. They hurt John Morant.
Mm-hmm.
They hurt John Morant. Like it is part of their game, and that's why it can be so frustrating when Steve Kerr sits up there and he's like, oh, shucks,
yeah,
it's just part of Draymond. No, it's part of your team. It's part of your culture. You allow this to happen because you want an enforcer. Just say that. Just say, we have an enforcer out there, and sometimes he crosses a line. That would have been all you needed to say. It is really unfortunate that Draymond Green, his career is going to be looked at. He is going to be a Hall of Famer, a first ballot Hall of Famer, and should be. He's one of the best defenders we've ever seen. He is a three-tooled player. Defense, offense, and he can pass. That is a rare thing to have in a big guy. He helped this team win so many basketball games and championships. But the first thing that we're going to talk about with Draymond is how dirty he was.
Yep.
And it's unfortunate. But that's what his legacy is going to be. It's going to be a great basketball player who was dirty as hell, probably the dirtiest player of this era.
I'm glad you put it that way. This sitting up there on a consistent basis, and this is not the first time Steve Kerr has done this, but playing the aw shucks card. Oh, that's just Draymond. No. Get a hold of it.
But if somebody hits your guy wrong,
you say it's your job to get a hold of it. You have yet to do that. So do your job.
But then they're complaining about the Rockets hitting Steph's thumb last season.
And Amen Thompson is, you know.
What are we doing?
Amen Thompson is, for what, this Jimmy Butler situation, he's you know, should be on the FBI's most wanted list, according to Warriors fans
and the
people in that organization. It's just insane to me. All right, now tonight we do have a number one seed in the East who won 64 games, down 2-0 heading into Indiana. The Pacers, of course, in game two had that unbelievable comeback, 20-point comeback, and then Tyrese Halliburton got a rebound off his own free throw miss, nailed a three even when they were down two to win that game. But, you know, the biggest reason the Cavs have struggled in this series, we don't have to hide it, it's been injuries. Evan Mobley's out with an ankle. DeAndre Hunter's had some issues. Darius Garland's been out with a toe since game three, I believe, of the first round series against the Heat when they swept them. It looks like tonight, according to The Athletic, these guys are going to try to give it a go. Now, Darius Garland has said he's going to give it a go. We don't have full understanding of Evan Mobley and DeAndre Hunter. But if those guys get back on the floor, they could make this a series. Now, with that, the Pacers already stealing two games on the road. Pretty massive. Pretty massive. And if you look at Tyrese Halliburton in his Indiana Pacers career, when he plays at home in the NBA playoffs, the Indiana Pacers are 9-0. He has yet to lose a game at home as an Indiana Pacer when he's actually on the floor. So that's another thing you're going to have to deal with. It's going to get live and real in Gainbridge Fieldhouse. So these guys can come back, but that does not guarantee by any stretch of the imagination that they're going to win what is most certainly a must-win game.
Yeah, if you're the Cavaliers, what you're telling yourself is, listen, we have been down our best guys in this series, and we are barely losing these games. That's what you're telling yourself. We've been in these games. A historic comeback had to happen. An awful shooting night from everybody not named Donovan Mitchell, especially Ty Jerome,
right,
led to this comeback. We can still get back in this series, and these guys being back tonight might just give them the juice that they need, because really it's one or two plays away from it being a tied series. So can Evan Mobley give you one play? Can he defend a rebound on a free throw? Like, can he box somebody out? It's can Darius Garland knock down one more shot? You know what I mean? Can DeAndre Hunter just make it difficult for Tyrese Halliburton on one more play? That's the margin of error right now for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and that's why, like, tonight, I don't know if you saw, but they're favored tonight.
Yep.
They're a 5-point favorite tonight in the game. So I think that they still have a shot to get back in this series. It's just going to be very difficult to do it in Indiana with the way the Pacers play. And when you have guys who have injuries, the Pacers just never stop running at you. So that's where the fatigue as the game goes on and the injury management as the game goes on is what the Cavaliers are going to have to keep an eye on.
That's the thing.
But they, you know, if Donovan Mitchell shows up the way he did in game two, they'll have a chance.
Yep.
They'll still have a chance. Because, like, they only lost 121-112 in game one. They lost 120-119 in game two. They could still get back into the series. It's just the Pacers are clicking on all cylinders right now, and they're playing together, and that defense is really showing up. So I can't wait to see what happens. I will say, I think it's quite ridiculous that you have some people on the national media pretending as if these Cleveland Cavaliers guys are soft for not playing through these injuries.
Stupid.
If you have a big toe injury, you can't move.
That's what I wanted to get to.
Especially
Darius
if you're
Garland,
a point guard.
Darius Garland, with how much he does on ball, with how much he handles it, he's their facilitator. That's what he does. He's one of the best assist guys in the entire NBA. That's one thing I'm worried about. Even with him coming back from injury and potentially playing tonight, that big toe, it slows you down. It slows you down, and he plays with pace. That's how he, you know, thrives. That's how he is, you know, an all-star. That's what he does. So that's still something that I'm worried about. If he's at 80%, what does Darius Garland look like out there against a guy like Tyrese Halliburton, who would likely be his main matchup? I'm curious.
I think that's the point, too. I get why people were frustrated. It's the playoffs. You're supposed to be playing through injury. Sure, whatever. if Darius Garland is injured,
you don't know the extent of the injury, by the way,
and he's trying to defend Tyrese Halliburton. It's not going to go well.
When guys sit out in the playoffs, people have to understand there is a very big reason. This is usually, if they're giving it a go in the playoffs, Darius Garland would probably take one or two more weeks off for that toe to actually heal if this was the regular season. Like, there's a reason they're sitting out. They want to give it a go. They want to give their team the best shot, but you have to take into account if they're not playing in the playoffs, that means they're hurt, they're injured.
It's just
beyond
most,
what you actually believe.
It's just the most armchair expert take somebody can have. Oh, play through the injury. It's like, well, you don't know what the injury is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely insane. And I want to know more about Darius Garland's toe and what is...
Like, is Steph soft
out,
because he's not playing through a hamstring pop? What are we doing?
No, I haven't heard anybody say that. But, yeah, it was Stephen A. Smith yesterday really going after Tyrese Halliburton. He said, hobble your ass out there.
It's silly. It would hurt them. If he's playing injured and he can't keep up with Tyrese Halliburton, it's going to hurt them.
Yep. Yeah, a slow, hurt, injured Darius Garland could be worse than even Ty Jerome was
right
in game one and even in game two, and
well,
he was 1 for 14.
Maybe. I don't know. That's going to be tough.
Yeah. Now, coming up on Sunday, we have Mother's Day, and there's a lot of different types of moms: working moms, stay-at-home moms, stepmoms, grandmoms, pet moms. Doesn't matter what type of mom, they all want diamonds from Robert Irwin Jewelers. Buy mom bigger, brighter diamonds during the Mother's Day diamond sale going on right now. Some examples: 2-carat lab-grown diamond stud earrings, $7.99 while supplies last. To the Moon gift set. It's a pendant, dipped rose as well, 24 karat gold, starting at $199. The Flexi Diamond Bangle bracelets, you can get one or a few, and they're stackable, starting at $899. For a pet mom, they have the Diamond Paw Necklace, $119. And then the Diamond Essentials, this is a bunch of different things. You could get earrings, pendants, bracelets, perfectly matched diamonds with excellent proportions to ensure you get a bigger, brighter sparkle. Those start at $299. But free financing is available. 12-month 0% interest or take up to 60 months to pay. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. Mother's Day sale is going on right now at Robert Irwin Jewelers. 5 locations or online at rijewelers.com. Now, we pick up this conversation right where we left off. We have some NBA playoffs to talk about with my guy Josiah Johnson. He joins on the other side.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Back in and rolling on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. And we have to talk some NBA playoffs and some NBA Twitter. How about it? We bring on Josiah Johnson, executive producer and host of the Gills Arena Show with Gilbert Arenas on X at King Josiah 54. Josiah, what's happening, man? How are you?
What's going on, brother? Appreciate you having me on.
Yes, sir. Now, let my listeners know a little bit of your history. You played ball at UCLA until about 2005, 2006. And then from there, you became sort of NBA Twitter Hall of Famer, been on multiple shows since then. Let my listeners know sort of about your story and sort of how you attack your day-to-day.
I played UCLA 2005, played with a bunch of guys who went to the league, knew that I was not going to be amongst those guys who had to figure it out, get into the working world, but worked in sports entertainment, sports production for the last 20-plus years. NFL Network, Fox Sports, done some stuff with Bleacher Report, done some stuff with Showtime, now doing the show with Gilbert Arenas, Gills Arena, with Underdog on YouTube. So just done a lot of different stuff. Also created a TV show called Legends of Chamberlain Heights that aired on Comedy Central for 2 seasons. Worked with Ava DuVernay, Michael Starbear, and Colin Kaepernick on Colin in Black and White. Which was a series following his younger life that was on Netflix. So a little bit of everything, man. Try to just, and also doing the social media and the Twitter stuff as well. But just try to stay well-rounded, try to do as much as possible.
Man, how'd you find that sort of lane in social media and NBA Twitter, man? Because you're everywhere. You're everywhere on that app, have been everywhere on that app for the better part of the past decade.
I enjoy social media, enjoy the discussion and discourse around basketball. Also love getting the jokes off. So, NBA Twitter especially is the perfect melding of all those things and gives me the opportunity to talk hoops with other like-minded basketball fans, but also get the jokes off, focus on the lighter side. I feel like a lot of people kind of take a lot of this stuff too serious. At the end of the day, we're all fans. Sometimes we'll go at each other because we're fans of different teams, different players, whatever it may be. But at the end of the day, we all love basketball. We love the discourse around basketball. So I really just love the ability that social media has to have real-time conversations, interactions, engagement with other like-minded people.
Now, we like the discourse, but do you love the discourse? I mean, when we look at how the NBA's talked about, I think a lot of people take exception to it. How do you feel about sort of that realm where you got the old heads, older guys? I know you guys don't do it on Gil's Arena, but sort of hating on the younger generation, you know, inside the NBA gets a lot of flack for that. Like, how much do you really love the discourse at times when it comes to the NBA?
I love it, man. I think, look, everybody's entitled to their own opinions. Everybody has a different way of communicating those opinions. When you work in sports media, sports entertainment, naturally you're going to ruffle some feathers here and there. But I think ultimately would love to see kind of the older heads have a lot more respect for the younger guys. I think a lot of their business bitterness stems from just the fact that the game has grown so tremendously. You know, you got 70-plus billion-dollar TV deals and these guys making excess of $350 million contracts, which a lot of the older heads obviously – who helped build and grow the game didn't get to take advantage of. So I feel like that's where kind of where the bitterness comes in. But at the end of the day, everybody loves the game. The game is way more advanced than it's ever been. The talent what these guys are capable of doing out there on the court, probably shooting a little too many threes. I think we can all agree upon that.
Right.
But, you know, when you've got six, seven, eight men that are able to come in, shoot five, six, seven threes a game, which is unheard of back in the old days, but just really a testament to the skill level and the foundation that they laid, the framework that they laid, that these guys are now taking advantage of.
Now, the show that you are an executive producer and a host of now is very unique. You bring in a bunch of different ball players from the past that we all know, whether it's Nick Young, Kenyon Martin, obviously Gilbert's there, Rashad McCants. How much different is it than other things you have worked on in the past because of the type of guys that you talk to every day and the type of discussion they can have from pure experience, right, and the back and forth? I believe it was yesterday. I saw Kenyon and Nick get a little contentious when you're talking about Greg Popovich and you know, going back and forth. So how much different is this role that you're playing than roles you've played in the past?
I think for me, it's a tremendous opportunity. I'm super thankful to Gilbert and being able to have the opportunity to work with him for nearly 4 years now. We started with a show called No Chill that was more interview driven. We'd have guests on and kind of more from their perspective. But being able to have a couch full of just so many tremendous basketball players, people you talked about, like Kenyon Martin, number one overall pick, Rashad McCants won a national championship at North Carolina, was a lottery pick, Brandon Jennings, trendsetter, you know, going from high school to play overseas in Italy before playing his NBA career, also a lottery pick, Swaggy P, who's just, you know, a legend of legends just for everything he's done for the culture. But Cheryl Swoops, Lexi Brown, just a lot of amazing, tremendous people that I get to be a part of. And look, I played college basketball, so I understand basketball at a high level, but having never been able to play in the NBA and experience the things that these people have experienced or played in the WNBA as well for our female talent on the show, to get their actual perspective and be able to ask them questions. I think too much now in sports media landscape, you have people who've never done it at a high level offering their opinions based on things they've never experienced. And that kind of frustrates me a lot. So even if you watch the way that I am on that show, I'm trying to get them to tell me what the things are really like. And it's, you know, you talk about the job situation.
Yep.
And Gil, you know, for everybody who's seen his Untold doc, Shooting Guards, that just came out on Netflix.
Watch it last night.
But if seen those, yeah, you know what I mean? But you've seen those situations, now you get to understand from the perspective and lens. And the one thing I love about Gil, he's always going to keep it real. He doesn't run or hide from anything. He's an open book, so he's more than happy to talk about all the experiences in his life and how those made him into the person that he is today. But having everybody on that show kind of come together, and like you said, the show yesterday, there'll be times where they agree, they disagree, they butt heads, but I think for people who watch the show, they need to understand it's all love amongst our crew. So as soon as those cameras stop rolling, obviously Nick and Kenyon get into it yesterday over a situation. As soon as the cameras stop rolling, it's just you have a lot of strong-willed individuals, former hoopers, and you kind of get an inside glimpse of, you know, what locker rooms were like back in the day, and it has really that barbershop feel to it where no topic is off limits, no opinion is off limits, and we really try to foster a community and an environment where everybody can really be themselves.
Yeah, you know, I always try. I used to play ball at the University of Memphis football. Like, these topics aren't that serious. I hate when people have beef over them and they let it percolate off air. It's frustrating. But talk with Josiah Johnson at KingJosiah54 on X. Now, let's get into some NBA playoffs. I want to get to a couple of Twitter conversations going on right now. One, we had last night Draymond Green get another technical. He's two technicals away and two flagrants away from getting a one-game suspension. suspension. And then after the game, he had some very pointed comments toward people in the media and people that paint him a certain way. He said, "You're trying to paint me as an angry black man." What do you view? How do you view Draymond and all the flagrants and technicals he has accrued through these playoffs, and then his comments last night? How do you feel about the entire situation that has played out?
Well, I think you have to separate Draymond, the basketball player, from Draymond, the human being. And he plays with a fire and intensity that's been very, very beneficial and successful to this Warriors team in building a dynasty during his 13 seasons there. So, you know, we talk about this a lot on the show, but you have to take the good with the bad, because there's always going to be more good than bad. You talk about a guy who was in the running for Defensive Player of the Year this year, has won that award in the past, and really has played himself into the Hall of Fame. And I think some people may disagree with that, but when you look at his resume and what he's been able to do, his numbers just aren't going to jump out at you. But how instrumental and vital he's been to the success of the Warriors franchise and during the 13 years that he's been with the team. And yes, does he get a little too turned up at times? Of course. Right. I mean, we see it with the text, we see it with the flagrants, a lot of stuff that it's a little too much. But at the end of the day, like he said before, nobody can be Draymond better than Draymond. Nobody can tell him how to be himself better than him. And I think that's a part of the passion, the fire that he plays with, that's made his career so great, that's made these Warriors team so great. Do you wish at times, yeah, he would turn it down a little bit? Does it start to impact and hurt its team? Yeah, we've seen that before in the past. But ultimately, this franchise doesn't have the success that it's had in the last decade or so without Draymond and what he's brought to the team.
Now, when we look at this series, it's kind of funny. I talked about it yesterday. It was Steph being out with the hamstring strain. It's really the first time I've seen him have to miss extended periods of time with this Warriors team in his entire career in the NBA playoffs. Draymond's been out for suspension. You've had KD out. Klay has been out at times. You know, you've had these injuries. It's never been without Steph. How do you think they can pace the rest of this series in a way that you know, can give them a chance to win it in seven games without Steph? Because I think the latest report is they're really not going to reevaluate him till game six. How do you feel that the Warriors can win this series even without Steph on the floor?
When you look at Steph, I think this is the first time that he's missed any playoff action since 2018. In 2018, I think he missed a stretch of games. But like Steve Kerr said, they had all NBA-level players there. You had Klay there. You had KD there. You had guys who could pick up the slack and really help fill the void of not having Steph. This team obviously doesn't have that. Obviously, you got Jimmy Butler, who's come over from the Heat and brings playoff Jimmy, that whole moniker, that mentality to what he brings. And like Draymond said, after Steph got hurt in game one, Jimmy has led two teams to the finals that didn't have exceptional rosters, that probably had rosters very close and similar to what these Warriors have. So they do have that safety guard there. You got Buddy Hield, who's been playing out of his mind as of late with the game seven, dropping the 33
right
on the Rockets, coming through in game one with the 24 piece. Obviously game two, it was a little tough for the Warriors to kind of figure it out when their first real game without having Steph there, because even game one, Steph only played 13 minutes, but he had 13 points in that game. So he was vital help to get the ball rolling and get them going. But it's going to be tough, man. There's no real way around it. I'm really curious to see what Steve Kerr and the Warriors coaching staff strategies and game plans they come up with to be able to sustain, because, you know, I'm a Lakers fan, LeBron guy. We saw with this Wolves squad, they're young, they're hungry, and they're top eight. You know, I put them against pretty much any top eight in the rest of the league. When you got guys like Dante DiVincenzo, Naz Reid, Nikhil Alexander-Walker coming off the bench, in addition to players like Rudy Gobert, who was, you know, four-time Defensive Player of the Year, but Julius Randle, who had a monster first-round series and playing at a high level. Anthony Edwards, who, you know, in the running to be the face of the league down the road, playing at a monster level in round one and kind of figuring it out after struggling a little bit in game one of this series. It's going to be tough, man. You got a Wolves squad who's hungry. You know, they've reached the pinnacle in the Western Conference Finals last season. You know, want to get to the finals. This is a team who kind of had a down year by their standards, you know, finishing sixth in the West, but they weren't truly a sixth-place team. There was so much parity in the West. And any one of those teams, you know, we were looking at playoff matchups. J.J. Redick even said it, you know, the Lakers, you know, we thought they were going to roll through them, whatever. But, you know, you got a top 10 offense, defense in the league coming in with a hungry young squad that plays fast, plays hard, really, really responds well to playing for their coach, Chris Finch. It's going to be tough for the Warriors, man. But I think, you know, if there's anybody that can do it, Steve Kerr and this crew can figure it out. I think they got to rely a little bit more on Jonathan Kuminga,
right,
which, you know, they were playing mind games with him with the contract situation. You see Kuminga really start to flourish in game two after getting played to the left and done dirty in the past few weeks. But now you're kind of learning, like, you really don't want to do those things, because now you lose a guy of Steph's magnitude. You need the rest of the team to be bought in mentally physically and really step up and do it. And to Kuminga's credit, you know, he's been playing, you know, been out of the rotation, playing a lot of janky minutes in these games, but to come through and did what he did, even though they lost game two, I think they can take a little bit from that for the rest of the series till Steph's able to come back, if he's able to come back.
Now, in the Eastern Conference, we have two 60-win teams down 0-2, and that's the first time this has happened in NBA playoff history. Obviously, the Cavs may be less surprising because the Pacers are a damn good team that I think went under the radar the entire season, and they're without DeAndre Hunter and Evan Mobley and Darius Garland. Like that's less surprising. The one that, to me, is very surprising, the Knicks have been able to hand the Celtics a couple of losses is coming back from big deficits. How surprised are you that the Celtics are in this hole heading into MSG?
We talked about it a lot in the regular season. You know, them setting the three-point record and living by the three and dying by the three. And that's the saying in basketball. You live by the three, you're going to die by the three. Obviously, 25 for 100 in these first couple of games.
It's crazy.
The amount of points they're leaving off the board. And the whole analytics thing is three is worth more than two, but two is worth more than zero. So at the end of the day, you're shooting all these threes and they're leading to zeros. It's really just, especially for the Celtics being defending champions, the success that they've had in the Eastern Conference during the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown era, it's very, very shocking, surprising to see, and especially a team that's had 20-point leads in the second half of both games to trick those off in embarrassing fashion in front of their home fans. But I don't think anybody outside of Knicks fans could have believed that the series would be the way it is. But like Kristaps Porzingis said, as crazy as it sounds, the pressure is off of them now because they're down 0-2.
Right.
They can just play, you know what I mean? Pressure's on the Knicks now to go back home, defend home court, and hopefully, you know, to the Knicks' favor, they just got to win one of these two games and they'll have a 3-1 series lead. And if they can get the win in game three and make it 3-0, you like to imagine you can get the Celtics to just tap out. The Celtics have been in that situation before against the Heat, right, where they came back and won three games to force a game seven but didn't get over the hump. Like, you'd like to think that if you can get it to 3-0 that this series is done. So, you know, a lot of pressure on both teams, but I imagine the Celtics will kind of figure it out. Joe Mazzulla, a very talented head coach, very smart and savvy. This team did win a championship last year. But, you know, they've got to kind of just move away from that stubbornness of being so in love with the three-pointer, because 25 for 100, if you're averaging 53 a game, you're only making close to a little under 13. That's nasty by any stretch of the imagination. No, there's no way you can slice or cut it to make that make sense. But you'd like to imagine this team will be able to shoot a little bit better from three-point line, hopefully go to the basket a little bit more, and try to focus on more twos as opposed to threes.
Now, with Jason Tatum, that's a big topic of discussion. You know, people going after him, saying, is he really a top 10 player? He didn't win Eastern Conference Finals MVP or Finals MVP. That was Jaylen Brown last year for that championship-winning team. So, like, I've been trying to sort through what's fair and what's unfair. I think what's fair to say about Jason Tatum is maybe later in the fourth quarter, attack the rim a little bit more. He needs to be a little bit more efficient, especially when he's shooting from the field and taking jump shots. But, like, what to you, with Jason Tatum, what's fair to say about him versus what's unfair to say about him?
Well, I think he got a lot of heat last season with Jaylen Brown kind of, you know, like you said, winning Eastern Conference Finals MVP and Finals MVP, how Tatum was treated on the Olympic team, basically being relegated to the role of a
right.
scrub after being first-team All-NBA. So he's got, I think, a lot of pressure, whether he wants to admit it or not. But ultimately, like a stretch of a couple bad games, and let's just be real, Celtics last year kind of steamrolled through the East before getting to the finals. Didn't really have a lot of opposition in their path to win a championship. Now they've got some turmoil, some adversity, and they've got to figure it out. This is an opportunity for him to step up and show. And he led the team in points, rebounds, and assists last season. I believe he's still doing that this year. Like, he's got to now step up and show it. You want to be the face of the league. You want to wear that crown. You know, heavy is the head that wears a crown. So now it's time for him to put up or shut up and just understand, like, he has a great position. Even in the first round, suffering that bone bruise in a shooting wrist, but being able to come back with three straight 35-plus point games, he's shown that he can do it. But now this is crunch time. This is where it really matters. Team's back's against the wall, and if he can lead the Celtics to a series win over the Knicks, despite these circumstances, I think people are gonna have to give him his love and respect. Now, if he can't do that, then he's gonna have to be prepared for another summer of people questioning him and questioning, you know, just him as a player. and what he brings to the basketball court.
All right, now final thing for Josiah Johnson at King Josiah 54 on X, executive producer and host of the Gills Arena Show with Gilbert Arenas. I talked about this yesterday. This is just sort of a big picture thing. When we look at these NBA playoffs, especially since round two began, three of the last six games have been decided by a bucket or less. You've had some buzzer beaters. The Tyrese Halliburton thing was insane. We've had, I think, five 20-plus point comebacks in these NBA playoffs. When we look at this NBA playoffs and how compelling they have been, I mean, in your lifetime, have you seen sort of a round one, round two go as well as it has for the NBA?
I mean, I definitely say round two. I don't think we, you know, the first time in history that the road teams all won game ones. And, you know, we're slated to look that way. Obviously, you had the Thunder and the Wolves come back and win those game twos. But on the East Celtics end, the Cavs both dropping two home games. I don't think you've ever seen anything that crazy in a while, but I think it's just a testament to the parity around the league.
Right.
There's been a lot of talk this year about viewership decline and like I said, you know, shooting way too many threes. But at the end of the day, we're looking at with the best version of the NBA. Now, from a strategy standpoint, that may not be the case.
Sure.
Skill level, just the level of freak athleticism and all the things that we're seeing. So we've got to appreciate that. And like you talked about earlier, you got a Pacers squad. I've been trying to tell people that the squad made the Eastern Conference Finals last year, and you may think that was a fluke or whatever it may be, but Tyrese Halliburton and what he's been able to do with this team top to bottom, one of the best teams in the NBA. Everybody understands their role, knows what they need to bring to the table, and goes out there and executes. So you don't have any issues with guys thinking that they're bigger or smaller than they are. Not to say that that's the case on other teams, but even a team like the Pacers, who don't get a lot of attention, obviously playing in Indiana, not going to get a lot of marquee primetime games during the season. You're getting to see now how tough these squads are. And the Cavs, look, the Cavs, you know, injury bug has killed them right now, missing two starters, you know, three key players on their squad, Darius Garland, you know, being inactive for the past few games with the sprained left big toe. But Donovan Mitchell trying to put the team on his back and you know, took a miraculous Pacers comeback, same thing we saw against the Bucks in the first round to be able to get that win. But I think we're just seeing the parity of what the league is. So for me, I appreciate it, man. I'm a fan of high-level basketball. You know, we prefer less blowouts. So we kind of
sure. We
go from game winners to 30, 40-point blowouts. It's a little tough to see. But that is the nature of NBA playoffs, where a team might get blown out. You look at the Nuggets, 43-point blowout. But now you got to come back to Denver, deal with that altitude. And, you know, you can't take that game with you into game three. It doesn't carry over. So as great as you played in that one, now you've got to deliver games three and four. Or you run the risk now of going back to OKC and being in a really tough spot. Same thing that we're seeing now with the Celtics and the Cavs. Now, you got to go into the Garden, New York. It's going to be turned up. We saw how turned up Knicks fans have been these past couple games. And same thing with the Cavs. You got to go in Indiana Pacers, Gainbridge Fieldhouse, which is also incredibly turned up during the postseason, go into hostile territory and fight to keep your season alive. But it's win or go home for a reason. So, you know, I'm curious to see how these teams pan out, but I think it's going to be an exciting weekend of basketball.
Well, great stuff, Josiah. I appreciate you carving out some time, and hopefully we can do this again soon.
All right, let me know, bro. I appreciate you.
Yes, sir. He is Josiah Johnson at King Josiah 54, executive producer and host of the Gills Arena Show with Gilbert Arenas, of course, presented by Underdog. But he wears multiple hats, NBA Twitter Hall of Famer, no doubt about it. Go give him a follow again at King Josiah 54. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. Now, hour number two is going to begin when we come back. David Cobb joins the program right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.